And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. It's June 23rd. Well, that says it all, eh, brothers and sisters? They're not going to keep us down. We've gone through fire together. We're coming out the other end. We know how to win. And today, that's going to be the theme of the show. I got two really special guests, Brent Everall from Ontario, Merv Ritchie from West Coast of Canada. And also, we got a special caller calling at the bottom of the hour, hopefully, Tricia from Ireland. She's just led an occupation of the offices of what's called TUSLA, which is a criminal society trafficking children for money. And she's going to give us an update about the occupation they did, how they got checked out, but how they're carrying on anyway. I want to also remind folks that there's really, if you're following any of our work at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates, you'll see the tremendous changes happening now. We got, as Brenda's going to talk about in a minute, actual officials of the Children's Aid Society with criminality written all over them, and the Prime Minister of Canada admitting genocide, assuming there's no consequence. Well, we're creating that consequence as we speak. Tribunal opening in Vancouver, September 16th. And prior to that, there was a whole series of training workshops going on and protest actions in July and August. We're going to have a breaking news announcement on Tuesday, which you can all follow if you go to murderbydecree.com in the morning. Look under ITCCS updates. You will see the YouTube posting and notice coming out that day. Some very important new evidence is broken from the west coast of Canada, which will be announced at that time. So please circulate that notice. Look at it Tuesday morning, I would say by about 10 a.m. Eastern time. It'll be up. And you'll see what I'm talking about. Brenda, you're there, of course.
Hey, Kev. Yep, I'm here.
As always, thank you. And I know in a little bit we're going to have Merv on in about 20 minutes, but I want to talk to you, first of all, about some recent developments. This is involving a case you're involved with in Ontario that, you know, got the goods on a top director of the Children's Aid Society. And I wonder if you'd just tell us a little bit about that first.
Sure. In 2011, it just started breaking that there was several foster homes here in Prince Edward County that were sexually abusing children. Several of those foster parents have since been convicted and served time. A lot of the kids are suing the CAS, the kids that were affected. And in 2011, Justice Jeff Griffin said that he hoped to see a public inquiry into the matter because it was just, well, he called one foster home a sex cult home. So he was hoping to see a public inquiry, but the Ministry of Child and Youth Services had come in and they did a ministry review. And even though I had really valuable knowledge, I was kept out of that review by a agent for the ministry called, his name was David Remington. So I was kept out of that review, and then I did go, this CAS ended up closing. It merged or amalgamated into a newly formed Children's Aid Society that was called Highland Shores. And so I went to several public meetings to keep up on, you know, the new administration and whatnot. And it was all the same lingo. It was just a new CAS, just a different name, in attempts to cover up what had happened with this Picton CAS. So then everything seemed to die off. They promised that there'd be severe accountability, but months after the merger, I was alerted to a Facebook page by Angus Francis had posted. He's a manager for care, in-care services with Highland Shores. And he had posted an image of a baby in a pot on top of a stove.
A pot?
A cooking pot, yes. So I phoned the police and the CAS, and I made an allegation, and sure enough, even though he has a young son of his own, allegedly, the investigation was done very quickly, and I wasn't allowed to know the results for privacy and whatnot. So it just kept being the same nonsense, you know, no accountability and whatnot. But it didn't, it just seemed to end with the kids or the foster parents being convicted. But then suddenly last summer, I think it was in the summer, it was in 2018 anyways, it just came out of the blue that Bill Sweet, William Sweet, the executive director, was being charged with several counts of neglect and failing to protect the kids that were in his charge. Now, the rumor is that it's because he knew full well what was going on, and he was covering it up, and he was putting the kids in those homes, you know, knowing that there was predators in them.
So, Brendan, let me ask you, this Bill Sweet, what exactly is his position in Ontario CAS?
He was the executive director around here for many years, at least 2025. And he was also the local director. Now, as far as I know, the local directors are compelled to be registered members of the Ontario College of Social Workers. Now, I've tried to hold William Sweet accountable in several ways through the college, but they say because he's not a member of the college, they can't do anything about it. And I argue with them that they certainly can, because they are to protect public interest and to regulate the practice of social work. So he was clearly holding himself out to be a social worker on his letterhead, because he wrote William Sweet MSW up there. But the college will not come in and regulate him. So it's just unaccountability until these charges got laid. But okay, I'm not confident that...
Charges are laid right now?
Yeah.
I mean, he's facing trial, is he, or what? Just investigation?
Yeah, the pretrial is, I believe, on July 8th. And I'll be going to that court date in Belleville. Because I'm drafting up a notice for the Crown and the police, but I'm also drafting another notice to bring in the RCMP and a public inquiry, because enough's enough. I know they're all not going to do anything, but the more I do to create a public record and show that, you know, all the collusion and whatnot, that's just going to bring the public over to our side.
I
am informing the Crown and the OPP that I have information that can certainly help convict Bill Sweet in this matter, because he absolutely ran a terror campaign against me and my children in the years that I was trying to expose systematic child abuse, which was approximately 2005 till 2012. And that's the exact same timing that this scandal was unfolding. So I have a lot of evidence that can help to convict him, I think. And the Crown and the police, I don't think they're going to want to accept it, because in doing so, they have to accept that it was a community of people that knew. Social workers, doctors, ministers, police, they all knew. And being thrown under the bus.
Okay, so somebody just send me a note. How can she look to the Crown or the RCMP when we know what they're like? I already know you know what they're like from personal experience. You've notified ITCCS about this too, I understand.
I will be when I send the notice, hopefully tomorrow. But as soon as I send the notice to the OPP and the Crown, I will be sending it to ITCCS too, so that we can all watch this unfold and watch the official sweat, because I'm publicly stating that I can help this case. But in doing so, they're going to have to accept a lot more evidence, and we know they're not going to want to do that.
Okay, now this really relates well to the tribunal being set up in Vancouver, because the reason it's being set up is we need a parallel system of justice, because in the Crown system, there is no justice or accountability, as you experience time and again. So
none. That's what I'm trying to
notice. We need to adjudicate this in our own courts at the same time. What are your thoughts about that?
I think something has to happen here. This, even if he was to be convicted, it's far from the be-all and end-all of what happened with this Prince Edward County CAS. And it's not just the CAS. It's all the CASs are up to the same thing. They're human traffickers. And the system and particular secret societies, and they're all helping to purport it. And us taxpayers, well, not us, but the taxpayers are helping to fund this nightmare, and then they refuse to bring any accountability to it. So we have to go outside of this current system. There has to be another way to prosecute.
Right. I mean, another thing, too, is that we learned during the residential school trials that first began because of our work, this would be early in the 21st century, something like 2001 to 2004. We found out that the Mounties and the judges are obligated not to proceed if there's anything that might implicate the Crown. That includes Crown agencies. So their hands are tied. Even if they're well-intended, they won't. Mm-hmm. They can't legally proceed against another Crown agency, even if they're killing children.
Yeah, it's to the point we have to take matters into our own hands for the sake of the children. That's who's suffering right now.
Yep. Well, you know, it inevitably these days leads into the whole question of jurisdiction, setting up the republic, common law courts, all of that. And it's unavoidable. You know, here's the thing we should talk a little bit, and I'm going to ask Merv the same thing when he comes on, because he'll be talking about this farcical missing women's inquiry and how the RCMP themselves are trafficking and killing children. Even Human Rights Watch in New York documented this in a 2013 report. But I say to him all the time, like, you can't get the killers to prosecute themselves. So how do we go about establishing this on the ground? What are your thoughts, like, the possibilities of that in Prince Edward County and in the area?
Well, I'm not hopeful for my area. I do see a lot of hope online for other areas. But this area's got a mentally ill mindset. We're strong loyalists here. And until mindsets change here, I think we have to set examples somewhere else. And I mean, there is a small margin of people here who want change, but the minute they step out of their box and seeking it, they're attacked by this network of Freemasons and loyalists. So I personally need to network with more people from Kingston and Belleville and whatnot and get myself more protected and get more bodies on board. And once we do that, we can form a people's assembly and start taking direct action in our own communities.
Right.
And that can mean child protection teams. And, you know, right, we do not need these human trafficking organizations pretending to protect our kids anymore. That needs to be done from a community level. It's our responsibility and our duty.
Yep, community policing the whole bit. And making arrests of these known child rapists the whole bit, right, whole nine yards.
And for a long time, it seemed like it was fantasy, you know, that it was just far away and undoable, but it's very doable.
Yep.
And it's very close.
It is, and you set an example. I mean, I love these quotes in Sun Tzu, and folks should, they often say, well, what do we do in these training programs, in these common law courts and that? I said, the best way to undergo training is to read in our manual for whistleblowers, the Truth Teller Shield, and you can get that on Amazon or directly through us.
Right.
Go to the 50 points at the end. It's a compilation of the main points in Sun Tzu, The Art of War, and Karl von Clausewitz on war. And main point is that every battle is won before it's fought. And the way it's won before it's fought is if you determine the ground, you determine the issues and the names of what you're talking about, the enemy has to respond no matter how big they are. We have proof of that. You know, 20 years ago in Canada, they were calling genocide child abuse. You know, children being harmed due to assimilation policies, all of these bullshit words. We kept saying genocide, genocide, genocide. So what's the Prime Minister of Canada saying as of a few weeks ago? Genocide. Everyone's using the word now. You can see that as, well, they're trying to co-opt it, but you can also see it as, we've set the terrain, they're responding. That was only a dozen of us, two dozen of us who did that. So that's all you need, Brenda, in Prince Edward County, a handful. You did find the terms, they've got to respond, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there might be others in the community that helped, but as far as I can tell, I was alone for a lot of the fight here in bringing down the CAF, and it's down. It doesn't exist anymore.
Right. Well, there you go. You did that.
I had a big hand in it.
You had a big hand in it, and we have to hold up those actions because, you know, people like us are naturally tend to be, I know you pretty well, you're unassuming, very modest, but we can't deny the truth of who we are and what we've achieved. And, you know, because that can be something we hold up to others, saying, look, we have achieved these victories. And that's what people need. You've got to build on small victories. And certainly
but, you know, we get so traumatized as people that it's taken me to this time to realize I did that. You know, like,
right.
I did that. Just by standing firm, telling my truth, not backing down, not selling out. Just standing tall, I did that. You know, my kids stood behind me, some of my family, a few friends, but it was a handful of people that kept me alive through this, and here we are. It does not exist now. The guy is charged.
Yeah.
Now, it's still not enough. You know, I got to keep going with this, but, yeah, I do not rely on the Crown or the police. I don't have any faith in them whatsoever, but by pulling them in and making them provide answers, it becomes telling.
Right. And we're at a tipping point, you know. I see this all over. People like you are in the ones and twos. That's how it all begins. And it's often limited to that. But they're all saying the same thing. Well, there's only one or two of me. Well, what do you mean only? It's the character of a person, not the numbers. You know, and that character can force change all on her own.
Exactly.
You know, and I've seen it, that miracle, time and again. So you're part of that, sister, and I mean, you're leading it there, so... tell the folks a little bit, though, of your situation, what you've faced, the consequences, and the ways they can help you.
It ended up, I had to move out of my family home for a number of years, and it ended up getting run rate down. It was abandoned for a number of years. And so now, you know, I live with no running water, no heat other than my wood stove, live out of a cooler and cook on a campfire. Or sometimes a propane stove, if I can afford the propane. But I really don't want to whine and cry because all the stuff that I went through made me who I am, and I really am so grateful. But it does wear you down, and it does put you in a terrible poverty situation, and your community turns your back on you. The smear campaign destroys you, and you just end up being happier living in a shithole all by yourself, you know. But it is tough. I have a giant hole in my roof right now. Trying to figure something out there. But there's so many of us living in this kind of crisis situation that I'm certainly not unique.
Well, yeah, and it's true what you're saying about the way we get improved by this struggle, right, and by our own suffering and loss, but at the same time, to function, to get around, you need travel funds, you need internet, you need all these things. And I'm putting this out to anyone listening, give money to Brenda. She's leading this campaign. What's the best way for them to get it to you? PayPal, is that the best, Brenda?
It does go into my bank if it's through my email, which is just my name, Brenda Everall at Gmail. But, you know,
is that Brenda? Sorry. Brenda Everall 31
at Gmail.
Oh no, just Brenda Everall.
Other...
Brenda Everall at Gmail, right?
Yes.
Brenda Everall at gmail.com. Got it. Please, everyone, donate to Brenda. It's gonna go. You know what? When you give it to somebody like Brenda, you know she's gonna use it, and it'll be a lot more effective than giving to other causes, right? There's no overhead, right, Brenda? You're gonna use it for this work on the ground.
Kevin, I literally cannot abuse money anymore. Years ago, I, you know, did the shopping and the hair and the nails and all that. I cannot use money unless it's for the good now or just basic survival. So funds definitely wouldn't be mismanaged because I'm trying to get an organization off the ground around here called Holisticus International, where I would stop impending apprehensions. If the family comes to me, they're now out of place of safety. I can deal with the police or the CAS. That's an apprehension stopped. So if I can get some kind of funding going on, I'm going to do amazing things and stand up for the people. So
I know that. I know that from experience.
But it's hard to do when I don't even have hydro at my house or internet or I walk down.
You got
to
go down to the library
internet.
To get on emails. Okay, so I also know you're leading an initiative. There's a meeting being planned on July 4th in the area, and I've had a number of contacts from people throughout the area. Now, we're talking the strip in southern Ontario around for folks listening in and around Belleville, Picton, that area. And if you're in that area at all, write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, or write directly Brenda Everall at gmail.com. And we'll come out to that organizing meeting July 4th, because we're going to be talking there about how to organize a people's assembly and carry on this work, and your own group, Brenda, and tying it all together. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Anything you want to say about that? Anything else? I know Mir will probably be on any moment. So.
Well, it just runs 1 to 4 that day. So if anybody can make it even for 20 minutes or an hour or the whole thing, whatever, we can certainly, you know, within those couple hours, we can make accommodations and whatever it takes to get people connected. So.
Right. Well, I've just been told by Don that Merv is with us. So, hello, Merv. Can you hear me?
Hi, Kevin. Yeah.
I'm here with Brenda, co-hosting today.
Brenda.
And hi, Merv.
Now, I hope that folks remember you, Merv. It's been a number of months since you were last on. And I know that I've given them some background, but you're a West Coast journalist. You run a newspaper there until it was shut down because of your work. And I wanted to talk about this whole, quote, missing women inquiry and your knowledge of the links with the RCMP and these disappearances. And we can carry on from there.
Well, yeah, I began a group of websites, all the daily news websites in the northwest of BC, from Smithers, the Hazeltons, Terrace, Prince Rupert, and Kitimat, and attended all the political meetings, of course, all the city councils and regional district meetings, all the project proponent meetings, and all the environmental group meetings and indigenous gatherings. We got very deep in the community, got to know everybody, and we kept hearing the stories about RCMP raping and abusing indigenous women. And so I was intimately involved with a Tsimshian girl. Got to know all her aunties and all her cousins, and everybody's related through all the nations here, the Gitxsan, the Tahltan, the Nisga. And I kept hearing the same stories. So we started covering it and reporting on it. And it got to a point where Human Rights Watch wrote a report, also singling out the RCMP. David Eby, the present Attorney General of British Columbia, came. He did a tour through northern BC when he was the Executive Director of the BC Civil Liberties Association, the BCCLA, and he produced a report called the Small Town Justice Report, and they spent 20 pages on Terrace. And whereas every other community only got a page, page and a half. Again, you know, referencing the RCMP being involved in the disappearances or the abuses, let's say. So as we published more, we got alienated by the RCMP, of course. They didn't like us. We would publish the positive stories. They did the DARE program, the anti-gang and anti-drugs in school programs, and the cops for cancer, their bicycle. You know, we also reported the good things, but they came on to us extremely heavy, and then was a staff sergeant or inspector. I don't even want to name his name, but anyway, they decided that we were no longer credible media, and they started pulling news releases from us. They would only give them to media that was favorable.
And you eventually did jail time.
I'm sorry?
You eventually did some time. I mean, they went after you legally too, right?
Yes. Well, that's leading to that. We were eventually shut down. All our advertisers were ordered to stop advertising with us. I got an eviction on my home. We were pretty forcefully financially destroyed or ruined. But while I was in Vancouver, I got word from an associate up here that a former RCMP officer, a 25-year veteran, was facing 17 criminal charges of rape, abduction, attempted murder, unlawful confinement. So 17 or 18 charges. So I took a screenshot of the charge list on the website, the courthouse registry website, put it up on my Facebook page and my news, and the next thing you know, I was facing almost 3 years incarcerated twice because they had a publication ban on it. I didn't realize that at first, but even so, I went to court. I defended myself and was basically exonerated at the end of it all, but they spent, it's got to be $500,000, thousands of hours of police time doing everything they could to saddle me with a criminal record and to silence me.
Well, especially during this last period, they wanted you out of the way so you couldn't contribute to this whole so-called missing women inquiry, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, it was very, very difficult. At the same time, I had started a political party trying to get these messages out to inform people. I ran as an MLA. And so being in and out of jail and in and out of court and fighting all that battle at the same time, it just became incredibly onerous. And, you know, the stress was
incredible. Tell us a little bit about, tell us about the Human Rights Watch report of 2013.
They actually titled it, I believe it was Those Who Make Us Disappear. And it became actually part of my initial disclosure documents that the RCMP gave to the Crown when they wanted to have me persecuted. They referenced the articles on my website and the missing and murdered Indigenous women, or the Human Rights Watch report that came out. In some manner to suggest that this publication ban issue had something to do with the missing women. And that really, to me, revealed that they were really attempting to hide this. Uh-huh. That it wasn't about anything else. It wasn't about their officer, single officer, naming him a 25-year veteran, you know, exposing him. That wasn't about that at all for them. It was about the missing and murdered women and keeping that off the screen. Because when I was cross-examining the officer on the stand, I asked him. I read his initial disclosure documents that were referencing the Human Rights Watch report and the missing and murdered women. And I read the to him. I said, what's this in here for? That, you know, he, excuse me? I said, well, listen, let me read you some more about what you put in this document. And finally, the judge interrupted me. He says, "What's this? Why is this? What's this? What's the importance of this?" And I looked at the judge and at the officer. Says, "Exactly. What is the importance of the missing and murdered Indigenous women to this trial? Why is this in the initial disclosure?" And everybody went silent. So it was really quite a telling moment in the trial, because the RCMP persecuting me wasn't about anything that I had done wrong. It was about silencing their involvement in the missing and murdered women in northern BC.
Well, let's talk about that, because I know working in the downtown east side of Vancouver as early as the late 90s, it was clear that a lot more women were going missing than the 16 that the RCMP acknowledged year after year. And secondly, that the disappeared women were actually all tended to be blue bloods that's connected to the matrilineal line that used to, you know, have authority in terms of knowing who owned the land and et cetera. So these were obviously targeted killings and involving the Mounties as well. So do you want to comment a little bit about that? And Brenda, too, if you have any questions, jump in at any point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You nailed it. And back many years ago when we were live in our media, we were reproducing some of your news releases. We got into a lot of flack for that. It wasn't just you, but Art Topham, we reproduced his stuff, and we got a lot of flack for that, anything that was controversial. But it's true, the foundation of the FBI, there's a book that's getting some publicity these days. It's called The Killers of the Flower Moon. But it talks about the Osage people down in Oklahoma that were sitting on these oil lands. And the matriarchs started getting picked up one at a time because they were the ones that had the authority in the land and owned the land. Well, that's the same thing up here with the Gitxan, the Tsimshian, the Haisla, the Haida, all the nations up here, the Wet'suwet'en. Right now, you know, Frida Hewson standing on the land of her land, the Unist'ot'en, defending her land. And we got the RCMP. It's a stunning thing, and it's so telling. We we've got is missing and murdered women up in this region. The RCMP won't put any money into it. There's no officers around. Someone goes missing, no officers. But they want to defend a Coastal GasLinks pipeline for the LNG pipeline project going to Kitimat. And there's hundreds of officers all lined up to defend this pipeline company. It's so horrendous. It's so blatant in your face.
Now that pipeline, it's a $40 billion liquid natural gas project Trudeau's approved. It involves PetroChina, foreign corporate interests. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I know it's connected to these disappearances of whole Native families in the area.
Well, yeah, the government industry knows who the royal families are. They know the lineage. They've known it since the early 1800s when the first British ships arrived for the Hudson's Bay Company. They know who to trade with. Because if you didn't trade with the right person, your boat would be destroyed.
Uh-huh.
So the British mm-hmm. knew who to trade with. And everybody knew. And they still know. I see court transcripts in here where the Lacalands is pretending to claim some hereditary leadership over territories here, specifically Lulu Island, where this court case was about. Petronas wanted to put in an LNG plant there, and the proper hereditary chief stood up. One of the judges stated, you know, that he couldn't make a ruling in favor of this because the right person isn't there.
Right.
So the judges know, the Crown knows who the right people are. But they're sure not helping. Like, if you want to have a reconciliation process, then we need to stand up, help, assist in any way, whatever it takes, to rebuild the traditional governance structures here. But everything the government is doing, industry supported by the RCMP, is to destroy the traditional governance structures that they made illegal back in the 1920s and earlier.
And they get a lot of help from the government chiefs as well in that process.
Yeah, they're supporting these band council mayors. They call them chief councilors, but it's just like the head of the regional district government body, elected body, is called the chairman. The chair of the regional district board, there's 12 members up here, and you go to a city council, you've got councilors and mayors. Same thing with a band council. They're councilors and there should be mayor. Not chief counselor. Chief counselor is to boost some indigenous man's ego. Because look, I'm a chief. You're not a chief. The word for Simshian is Simgiget. That's the real word for chief. We're not supporting the true leaders. We're insidiously undermining everything about the traditional culture up here. Just like, if they have to kill them, like what they've been doing, like as you've alluded to in the downtown east side, if anybody thinks that Willie Picton was the only one involved in that, living in a world of cognitive dissonance.
Brenda, any comments or questions you got?
There's just so many similarities with how they come at all of us. They spent thousands on you. They spent thousands... half a million of them, it's so well orchestrated, and we have to start seeing that there is another element at play. There's definitely some other faction at play, whether that's Freemasons or, it's up to people to start investigating themselves and figuring it out. But it's not just normal people at play here. There's other oaths that are compelling them to do these things. To us and to the people, So we have to start looking beyond what we see and starting to see the obstacles that are taking us down. Because when these systems collude against us, like Merv said, it was well orchestrated. He was broke in no time. It just hits you so financially. And, then the doctors, too. They get in on it, and if you're sick, they will not do anything to help you. And then Revenue Canada gets in on it. And, I was just reviewing a case today about Dr. Eva Stridle, or I'm not sure about the last name, but She got into the income tax years ago, how unlawful it was, and she joined the movement. And then she was hit for tax evasion. So then she, somebody that was at her court case saw Masonic handshakes and hand symbols and gestures going on. So he wrote a sworn affidavit on behalf of her, and they challenged the court, saying that Freemasons were controlling her and her court case. And the Supreme Court of Canada has not denied that Freemasons are at play.
Well, and also, like, Merv, it was actually the Knights of Columbus that shut down your paper, weren't they? The Catholic Knights of Columbus.
That's true. They were the ones that did the real dirty work, yeah. And then yeah. Because so many people are... Religion really binds people. If you're a Catholic, you know, you're kind of blinded and you just do as you're told. It's a very difficult thing to get beyond. But, you know, it comes down to economics. Everything is controlled economically. And up here presently with the tanker ban, well, let's go back to what happened to the Gitxsan and the Wet'suwet'en. When they won the Supreme Court of Canada decision, the appellate court ruled that they actually did still practice their traditional culture, so they still did have rights to their land, and they had to be consulted on the logging that went on in their territory. It took a lot of years. When that was called the Delgamuukw ruling. That's what everybody recognizes it from. Immediately after, they shut down all the logging industry in the Northwest, and not just shut it down, but they ripped out the mills. Logging mills were gone, pulp mills were gone, because they had to. You know, so what they did was they drove everybody into destitution and poverty. And you see that wherever there's a resistance now to this petroleum industry, you'll see communities get shoved into poverty, whether their former industries, like pulp mills, blow up and burn to the ground. Right now, with this tanker ban that Justin Trudeau just passed, or the Senate and the Parliament just passed, I'm hearing rumblings that some of these other industries that have been started here are going to close. That is the way it's controlled. It's all economics. People
right.
want money. And the serious indigenous Tsimshian up here are refusing to deal with money when you bring all the... Many of them say they won't go to the feast halls because everybody's exchanging money now, not foodstuffs, Ulican
right.
grease, dried salmon, because it's money's controlling everything. It's really easy
and
to
they
force people
to the same
to
around here. This community was built on canneries, and then over the last couple decades, they've made sure that all of those canneries shut down and everybody lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well,
it's the same with whistleblowers. First thing you do is make them unemployable. I know that.
Well, and the whole community. What we just heard today, I was just having a conversation earlier today. The finance minister, I believe, is coming to Kitimat. Might be there today or tomorrow, I'm not sure. Announcing extra money for Canada LNG, or LNG Canada, to support that industry. Of course, now that's against the indigenous that have been staying in the way. But it may be, we're hearing rumblings that they might even shut down, if there's no acceptance here, Rio Tinto Alcan's smelter in Kitimat. They just built a new smelter, but they've got a power line they want to transmit and sell the power. And they could shut down the smelter and sell power and, you know, drive people more into poverty in Kitimat. But people are investing in Kitimat now. Their housing rental prices are through the roof. The regular average family simply cannot rent anything anymore. That's happened in Terrace as well. The downfall of all these projects is that the money goes, prices of everything goes way up.
I remember when I went up to the Hobima Reserve south of Edmonton speak there, they said the worst thing that ever happened is when the oil money came in. All the families, every native family on the reserve got dividends, 40,000 grand. That's when the crack cocaine started coming in. That's when organized crime and the gangs started. Soon everybody was impoverished again because they'd all bought Humvees and things like that. They all went into debt, had to sell the car, and they were worse off now. So it's how this money corrupts all of us.
What's happening in Kitimat Village. What's happening now. They're giving them thousands of dollars every few months, and that drugs and drinking has just gone through the roof. And our MLA here, Ellis Ross, he's from the Kitimat Village. He's a Heisla. And he's saying, oh, this will stop suicide and drinking and drugs. He's so clueless. It's unbelievable. Everybody knows. All you have to do is go up to any of these mines. I've worked in the mines. That's where the drugs and the hookers and all the sickness comes is from all that. And everybody, Chris Hedges, you know, he writes these huge stories about that's where it all comes from. And this Ellis Ross character, just, I mean, he is so deluded. It's unbelievable. Uh-huh. And the media here, the ones, you know, my competition back in the day, they give him such an astounding amount of free coverage. The Breaker News, everybody's kind of exposing what they're doing. Or let's say alternative media is exposing what he's doing. But Post Media, Black Press, Bell, they're all given this unadulterated, what do you call, propaganda. And He's like, you know, it's terrible to say. Like a token Indian, he comes up and they're hoisting him up as this, look, he's an indigenous man, he supports it, and the guy's clueless.
Redwashing, they call it in PR.
It's so astounding. And, you know, and I say things and people attack me, and it's, you know, I just shake my head. I mean, I get so disappointed with, you know,
people don't believe
what they see in this mainstream media.
I'm really glad the three of us are on today because you and Brenda and I all have been through the same thing in many ways. And I want to use the last 10 minutes here on the show.
I
have you both back again. But the last 10 minutes talk about the context of this, what we've learned, the bigger picture. This is why we're targeting, because we're not just talking about piecemeal problems or changes. We're talking about...
If you're talking to me, I can't hear you, Kevin.
Pardon me? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yes, I don't know if you can hear me at all, but
yes,
it's gone completely silent on my end.
Oh, no, keep talking. We can hear you. Keep talking. Brenda, can you hear it?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I can. Yeah.
Yep. I can't hear anything here. Every once in a while, I hear some static, and that's about it. So I'm just going to hang up, and if you're going to call back, fine. It's been good talking.
Don is going to call you back. So, Brenda, maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I'm just a little... That's just weird, you know, because before the radio program, I was having network error on my phone.
Yeah. All the phones are targeted easily. But it's a question of the people who tend to get targeted are those who see the bigger picture. It's not those who can be bought off with a few changes, right? It's
exactly.
People who say, look, we got to have a different authority, a different jurisdiction that returns power to the people. Those are the kind of people they worry about. Because we're talking about really kind of a revolutionary change from below. We're not talking about we can't be bought. And so they target us. I mean, it's that simple.
Exactly. There's so many activists out there on their own cause, you know, like chemtrails for one person and CAS protection for another, or advocacy. We all, you know, tend to get caught up in our own thing, but once you go down so far, you can only really research and try to understand what's going on, and then you start to see the bigger picture, and you don't just have one cause anymore. You're fighting for humans and children and the whole world, because once you see what you can't unsee, the world changes. And
exactly.
There's no going back after that. So they're after us types that can see the big picture, not just one problem in the system. We see the whole problem and we see the source of it and we know how to stomp it. We just have to get others to join us.
Right.
So that's where the real threat lies, I think.
Merv, you're back with us.
I am. I can hear you well now.
Good. Now, we were just talking about the people who tend to get targeted are those who are seeing the bigger picture, seeing the context historically and systemically about all this. So what are your thoughts on that, any of that?
Well, anybody that gets a following, that has people listening and reading, as we did, we had the largest media outside of the little mainland of British Columbia, besides Castanet at the time in Kelowna. Anybody that gets a following is certainly silenced. That doesn't toe the official narrative, as you know, say. And it's easy to silence somebody. And you don't have to be vicious about it. You just cause all sorts of difficulties in their life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, it's really quite simple to do. And I heard you, Brenda, I believe it is, at first when I was listening in originally, that you were standing alone. And we all learned that in grade school. Somebody would ask a question of the math teacher, and the bully kid would be mouthy. And his defense, mm-hmm. you know, they'd all go, ha, 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 and laugh at you, too. And so the majority of the students would be silent because they didn't want to be laughed at or singled out and bullied. But the bullies were a very small minority. But the majority of the people then didn't defend anybody else or speak up because of their fear of being attacked, too. We have a majority of people that want to do exactly what we're doing, but they're frightened of being singled out and targeted.
I'm seeing that now. People are awake. Yeah. They just don't know what to do.
They need, and it's always some one person, such as yourself, that stands up. And as soon as you get one or two people, next thing you know, we've got a crowd of half a million people doing something. But you have to stand up and you have to stay strong and not attack other people.
Right.
So exactly. They haven't evolved to what you know yet. So you have to be really patient. I'm guilty, boy. I lose my patience sometimes.
I do too, and I lose my, I get so upset with humans, but then I realize it's humans I'm fighting for, and then I get into this vicious fight in my own head, and it's terrible.
Well, leadership is key in all this, You got to know yourself. I mean, all three of us tend to be fairly unassuming people, but we also have to know ourselves and know what we've achieved and know what we can do, because if we can't relinquish that leadership because of a false modesty. It's needed right now. We got to unite on
that. That's where
my
strength is coming from now, is in knowing myself and my strengths and to hell with everything else.
Right.
The petroleum industry presently, the resource extraction industry, is the enemy, period. And the petroleum industry right now is the head of the resource extraction sector that is fueling and funding everything that's wrong with this planet. And I'm always hearing, even on CBC today on Cross Country Checkup, they're even asking David Suzuki, and he didn't answer the question. Well, what's the alternative? What can we do? We have to transition. Nobody's saying, well, what can we do? Well, it's really simple. I just don't, and it's because they made the product illegal 100 years ago. And who made it illegal? It was the oil industry with the media, William Randolph Hearst and DuPont. They made hemp illegal. We could grow hemp this year and start replacing every petroleum product there is.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp's the answer. But we can't say that. Nobody wants, even CEC, they laugh.
Okay, we got about
when they bring up hemp.
We got about 5 minutes left. I want to give each of you a chance to talk about upcoming things, the things that you think we should be working on, and then I've got a few announcements. So, Brenda, go ahead.
I'm just still on the same track with be responsible for yourself, your family, and your community. And in doing so, we can spark change all around the world and be the change that we want to see. So that's going to start with coming out to local events. So if you can get out to the July 4th event in Picton, email me or Kevin. The event runs from 1 till 4. Nothing set in stone with an actual agenda. It's just a meet and greet and, see where things go from there. So we've all just got to start making initial contact and putting words into action at this point. And that starts on July 4th in my community.
All right. Picton, Ontario.
Yeah.
Merv, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the only thing I have is compassion. Even the guys that are kind of stuck in the oil industry and they're pro-pipeline, you have to have compassion. That's what love is, ultimate compassion. You've got to understand these guys are coming from a position of not knowing, not understanding. So we all have to take our time and try and not get mad, just compassionately this ultimate compassion, to understand where they're coming from and gently bring them on. And there is an alternative to all this. Every product that we use today can be replaced overnight. In 1 year, we can have it all changed. We just need leadership. And right now, we don't have it. With Elizabeth May promoting the tar sands above other oil sources, which are much cleaner, I'm astounded that anybody even vote for the Green Party. So I'm not... it's an oxymoron here at the present moment. How do you... shake these people out of this. I just don't get it.
She takes an oath of allegiance, as leader of the Green Party, a member of Parliament, she takes an oath of allegiance to Queen Elizabeth and her descendants, nobody else.
No.
So October 21st, folks, when you vote, you're committing an act of treason. You're signing away authority to representatives of a foreign, criminally convicted power called the Crown of England. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do shows prior to the election about alternatives. So we're going to think about that. Merv, I'd like you to come back, you and Brenda, again. I want to get into more details about some of this stuff because it's an ongoing story. There's a tribunal on September 16th in Vancouver. Would love to get this evidence into the docket of that tribunal. I'd like to talk about that as September approaches. But I really, you know, appreciate all your contribution, what you've suffered, and you too, Brenda. It's great having you both on the air with me.
Well, thanks. And one last thing quickly, Kev, if I could. Anybody that wants to show up at the Belva Courthouse and see me or help me, I'll be doing a small rally, whatever I can, to raise awareness for cameras and whatnot, that this community did not act alone. So,
okay, so when and where is that, Brenda?
The Belva Courthouse on July 8th, I believe. If you Google William Sweet, the evidence for his court date should be fairly accessible.
All right. Belleville, Ontario, July 8th, probably the morning. 10 a.m. or something, I assume.
Oh, they're going to want to get it done as quickly as possible before the public gets there, I'm sure. So.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Brenda. We'll talk soon. And thank you, Merv. We'll have you back on soon.
Good to hear your voice, Brenda, and thanks, Kev. Bye for now.
Right. Yeah, you too, Merv. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. And for everyone listening, please go to murderbydecree.com. This Tuesday morning, there will be something posted there under ITCCS updates, a very important breaking news announcement from British Columbia, from the West Coast, new evidence that has surfaced by the tribunal investigators there involving the missing women. Also, things related to that request being made at the international level of other governments to support that tribunal. So please follow that this Tuesday, murderbydecree.com. Under ITCCS updates. If you want to get involved in anything you've heard today, number of things. Write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com, and look under Kevin Annett in Amazon at all of my books and order them. Contribute to this show. We need financial support. This costs $250 a month to operate, which we don't have. We runs totally from community contributions. So you can contribute on PayPal by going to the email pickwick88@yahoo.com, like the Pickwick Papers, Charles Dickens, pickwick88@yahoo.com. That's how you can contribute. And finally, don't forget that you are the leadership. You're listening to this. You're the tip of the spear with all of us. It's by what you do today and tomorrow that things will change. So I want to thank you. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.